Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cat. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
All right. Today's podcast is titled, because it's Mobile Home Mondays, but we got some news we're mixing up in this. The original title of today's podcast, which was based on and a news event that happened, well, I guess last week, or towards the end of last week, was on Everybody Gets Shit On, volume 2 or 3 or whatever. I've done at least 1 or 2 of those. But then there's some other exciting events that happened over the weekend. So I changed the title to Mobile Homes, Sun Valley, Virgin Galactic, Social Commerce versus Victimhood. We're going to start off with a Victimhood audio, which clearly demonstrates everybody does get shit on right here in the United States. But then we're going to move up from that way, from that vibration, and go to something higher. Because I believe that there'll be less and less people that'll be jumping on the victimhood or getting involved in the victimhood industry, because it is an industry.
The family of a 17-year-old shot and killed by a sheriff's deputy in Arkansas are seeking justice and getting support from national civil rights activists. Hunter Britton's family says he was not armed when Sergeant Michael Davis shot him during a traffic stop near Beebe last month. Yesterday, friends and family gathered to remember the teenager at his high school. The mourners included the Reverend Al Sharpton and attorneys for George Floyd's family.
It's been real tough. It's been 2 weeks now, and it's finally real.
Jesse Britton says his 17-year-old nephew Hunter should be enjoying his summer ahead of his senior year of high school.
We're still worrying what's going to happen with this officer, why he's not been locked up. We cannot even begin to understand this, and we need some answers.
Police say Hunter Britton was shot and killed during a traffic stop on June 23rd at around 3 a.m. His family says he exited his truck with this bottle of antifreeze to place behind his tire to keep the car from moving. That's allegedly when Sergeant Michael Davis opened fire. Benjamin Crump is one attorney representing the family.
The facts are going to tell us everything that happened, and he should be charged to the greatest extent of the law because justice will warrant it, because Hunter Britton's life mattered.
Davis was fired from the sheriff's department last week because he violated department policy when he did not turn his body camera on until after the shooting.
Here's my decision.
Lono County Sheriff John Staley released a video explaining the decision.
This means there's no video of the actual shooting. We see the aftermath, but not the shooting. Without all the evidence, I cannot make any determination on whether the shooting was proper.
Arkansas State Police say their Criminal Investigations Division is now looking into the case and whether or not to charge the former sergeant with any crime.
My nephew was murdered. And so I think that he should definitely be charged with murder.
Family and friends gathered at Britton's memorial service yesterday wearing Justice for Hunter t-shirts. Delivering the eulogy, Reverend Al Sharpton called for unity.
He does not deserve this. People don't have to qualify for justice. Justice ought to be given to everybody.
After the funeral, Britton's casket was taken out of the auditorium and placed in the bed of his own truck.
This is above politics. I don't care who you are, who you support, all of us want to see our children come home at night safe and protected.
Family members said Hunter Britton dreamed of becoming a NASCAR driver after graduating from high school next year. This is the first time I think that we've seen them at a funeral service for someone that's white. And they made a very, interesting and good point that they are fighting for justice when it comes to policing.
Yep.
And even part of that other soundbite with Al Sharpton, Reverend Al Sharpton, he said, I don't care if you wear your Trump button or your Biden button, you should be out here because it's about justice, regardless of what color you are.
And it's just so heartbreaking. If you're the family, all you want is information.
Yeah,
and there's no video.
It.
They have nothing.
Yeah, but nothing brings them back.
Nope.
That heartbreaking scene of him being taken away in the bed of his own pickup truck.
Today's podcast is titled Mobile Home Sun Valley, Virgin Galactic, Social Commerce versus Victimhood, and that was, I want to say, our victimhood segment for today's podcast. You guys can comment on it later. But Hunter Britton, a young white male, police shot and killed by the police. I've said it once and I'll say it again. Everybody, no, get shit on. Now, I said versus. Let's go to another audio where it's not as somber, but I'll let the audio play for itself because this is where the ball is going.
Y'all remember when Oprah excitedly said in that Weight Watchers commercial, here's the thing for me, I love bread. She said it. She meant it. I love bread, too. Well, three friends from Chicago share that love so much that they founded their own company 5 months ago. It's a black bread company. It's the first black-owned sliced bread company in the country, believe it or not. And our Eric Cox has more.
From best friends to business partners. Charles Alexander, Mark Edmond, and Jamel Lewis are making history as the men behind the Black Bread Company, the first and only African-American-owned bread business in the entire world.
What we've done essentially is larger than us. One of our biggest goals is to be a household name.
These three Chicago natives just started the company in February. But the idea was born over a year ago. Edmund's wife gave him a grocery list, and he was determined to only buy black products. But when he searched for African-American-owned bread, he came up empty.
After about 45 minutes, I realized there's no African-American-owned sliced bread.
That's when he called his friends for help. Even after an extensive online search, still nothing.
At that point, it was like, yo, we got to do something about this. You know, and then from there, the Black Bread Co. was born. We have to build our own, you know. That's the only way around it.
And it didn't take long until the Black Bread Co. was on a roll, securing deals with several major grocery chains in the Chicago area, shipping out orders across the country and internationally, even appearing on national TV. These business owners and best friends quickly becoming the upper crust, all while remaining humble.
We wouldn't even be here if we weren't standing on the shoulders of those that came before us.
We're here to be that voice, just to raise the consciousness of not only the African-American consumer, but consumers in general. Just to know what you're buying, know who you're buying it from, and know what you're supporting in that instance.
In Chicago, I'm Eric Cox for Start Your Day.
I love this story, and hey, guess what? This morning we want to introduce you to the three best friends who started the Black Bread Company, Charles Alexander, Mark Edmond, and Jamel Lewis. Good morning, fellas. What's up, man? Thank you for joining us here on Start Your Day. Congratulations.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm so happy.
Good morning, Mike.
Absolutely.
Good morning.
Doing great. Good morning. I'm so happy you guys are here, and congratulations on everything. We wish you the best of luck. But Mark, here's the thing. It's amazing how you stumbled upon this business because you wanted to buy black-owned, and you discover there's no black-owned bread companies. Is it amazing to you that it actually took this long to be the first?
Yes, absolutely. You know, when I was looking for the bread, I was for sure certain that we had at least one African-American-owned bread. You know, it didn't even cross my mind that we didn't at the time. And then once we once I was doing the research and I called my friends and they did their research, then we quickly realized that, yeah, it didn't exist. And after 100 years, we just now have representation on the shelf and the bread out. You know, so it's a huge accomplishment for us, and we just continue to push for it.
And I love it, and you're going for yours, and you're taking a leap of faith. It's one thing to start a company, fellas, but I got to admit, look, it's another thing not to have any experience. Making bread, y'all ain't got no experience doing that from what I understand. What have been some of the challenges, Jamel?
You know what? The first thing for us is, like you said, not having experience in this industry. We know what we know, and we know what we don't know. So, again, we kind of consider ourselves, even though we're 100 years kind of late to the party, we're right on time in terms of just naturally where the world is and just being even just ready and receptive to who we are. So our challenges may be great, but we're in it together. The three of us, every day we work and fight hard to make sure that we operate at the highest level and keep pushing forward.
And you're making it happen. You started, what, 5 months ago, and you did it. And we were still kind of in the pandemic, to be honest with you. We still are right now. But, Charles, I got to ask you, man, because, you know, you invested your time, but you also had to invest that money. So I don't know how your girlfriends or your women felt about that, your families. You know, how do they feel about you saying, you know what, I'm going to take this leap of faith, and we're going to go out here and we're going to start this bread company? What's the reaction been there?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mike. And I say, you know, our wives are our biggest blessing in terms of our business as well, right? They support us from the start. As you just mentioned, this started during the pandemic. Few of us didn't have jobs during the time, and so we literally went in our savings, our family savings, to start this business. And what some people don't know is that when we officially started, when we launched, we only had $1.87 left in our bank account. But we like, this got to work, right? Yeah. In our business account, that's all we had left.
We wiped out.
And so we was like, we got to do it. So our wives have been very supportive of everything we're doing. They believe in our vision.
And they've been seeing us. So before even launch, we worked tirelessly and met for an entire year before anybody even knew about the Black Brick Company. So they saw the hours and hours we put in to actually even get to our launching point.
You got to have that support, but I know your lady said, hey, you know what, I'm going to help you make this bread, but y'all better make that bread back the other kind of way on the back end, and it's been successful so far. Hey, check this. Yeah. Look, you got three entrepreneurs. You're also three best friends, and a lot of times, I mean, I love my boys, but I don't necessarily want to mix my business with them because that could cause conflict. What makes it work for you guys, Jamel?
You know, what makes it work for us is honestly our friendship. We always said, even when we started this company, we had to kind of take a step back and remind ourselves that, you know, checking in with each other, keeping our families first, of course, and God first, honestly, even. But really, we are connected to each other that deeply because of our history together. So Charles always calls it divine timing for this to be happening with us. But again, our friendship is what we stand on, and we put that first. We put our families first, and in that regard, we can't fail.
Hey, look, I'm looking at you fellas. It don't seem like y'all gained a lot of weight because I understand y'all went through a lot of bread to try and find the right formula. So that's a lot of carbs right there. What's the bread taste like? Tell the people out there right now, because when I get bread, I want some good fresh bread that I can put on my turkey sandwich and put my turkey between, like nice cheese. What's this bread taste like, and how did you find the right formula between the three of you?
Yeah, so our bread, so Mike, we always say we know we didn't know, all right? And a few things we knew from the start is that it had to taste good, it had to feel mm-hmm. good, it had to look good, right? Because it's for the culture, right? At the end of the day, and so our bread is very flavorful, right? It's fluffy, it holds very well with sandwiches. I'm big on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, so I was like, it got to hold on crunchy peanut butter, right? It has to hold. We can't have no tears, right? People make their sandwiches, you know. and our honey wheat, you can taste the honey, right? You can taste the wheat, like. That all the ingredients is in our bread, we want to make sure you can taste it very, a very distinct flavor, a very distinct taste. And I want Mark to talk about, like, all the bread we had to taste beforehand.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, when it comes to thousands of slices in a short amount of time, especially during the pandemic, personally, I probably picked on about 25, 35 pounds. You know, I'm in the gym right now trying to get it all off. like I said, I have to take our haters away from bread. I was like, you know, I love our product, so any bread I do eat would be ours, of course. But I'm like, just give me a few months, and I'll be back to it.
Hey, man, just get that whole wheat bread that you guys got, that honey wheat. That'll help you out as well, because sometimes it's good carbs. You got bad carbs, but we want to get it. We want to get this bread, man. We want to support it. You guys already been on Ellen. I know Ricky Smiley has endorsed your bread, radio host. You're in baseball stadiums. Listen, for our viewers out there, how can they buy this bread? Where can they go and get it, and how can they support you?
It's really simple. Blackbreadco.com is the first place they can get it. Again, we're excited for all of the overwhelming support we've received across the country and beyond. Japan, Australia, all types of places, Canada, Alaska, of course, here in the U.S. But blackbreadco.com, of course, they can follow us on Instagram at the Black Bread Co. We're available in stores in the Chicagoland area as well.
Go out there, support this. I've had a couple of people, including one of our bookers, come up and tell me. I had a producer in L.A. say they know you guys and wanted to have you guys on. Good guys, entrepreneurs, best friends, family men, and good fathers as well. So you want to support these young Black men who has a great company. I'm going out there and I need some of that black bread myself. I want one free loaf, but at the same time.
Don't worry about that. We got you. Don't even worry.
And then, you know, hook my co-host up, Sharon, because she always like free stuff. You know, she don't want to pay for nothing. So hook her up. But then we're going to buy bread after that, man. Absolutely. And the merch as well. We're going to support this, and we're going to get you into numerous stores across the nation. Fellas, keep up the good work. We really appreciate you hanging out with us here on Start Your Day. Come back and let us know how things are panning out for the company in the years
to
come.
You know what? We definitely want to come back because we have a huge surprise coming down in Atlanta.
Very soon.
So we're coming down to Atlanta. We got
very
a huge
soon.
Announcement we're going to make very soon.
Yeah, let's do your show first.
So
make the announcement.
We want to contact you and make sure that we release it on your show first.
First.
All right, you heard it right here. All right, well, the best thing since Black Sliced Bread right here on Start Your Day. Charles Alexander, Mark Edmond, and Jamel Lewis, owners of the Black Bread Company. Fellas, once again, appreciate you. Congratulations and the best of luck. God bless, my man.
Today's podcast is titled Mobile Home Sun Valley Virgin Galactic Social Commerce versus Victimhood. And I played that clip. And some of the other clips we're about to play. Sun Valley. Recently, there was a billionaire's summer camp that happened in Sun Valley, Idaho. And I've studied, you know, what it takes to become a billionaire over the last few years. And here's the common denominators. Because there are less than 3,000 billionaires on the planet. Typically, a person who becomes a billionaire, and there's several first-generation billionaires that are walking around right now, Kanye West, Jay-Z, Dr. Dre, which basically they made their money in intellectual property. I mean, people might refer to them as rappers, but all rapping is basically intellectual property. Now, but the common denominators that I've found in most people who become billionaires, they are pioneers or they're in an industry that has very little or no government regulation. And like, for instance, making a record. You don't need a business license to make a record or a recording or write a book. J.K. Rowling, Harry Potter. She was broke when she started writing in a coffee shop over in the U.K. Now she's a billionaire. Like I said, you don't need a business license to write books and get them published. Same thing with, you know, rapping and that type of thing. Well, I played this because these guys, they didn't do anything new. There were three guys that decided to make bread. I remember my grandmother used to make bread. But start a company just based on making bread. You basically don't need a business license to make bread. You're not going to go to prison or jail for baking bread. So these guys, if they plan it right, they can become billionaires. In any event, like I said, there was what they call a billionaire summer camp in Sun Valley, Idaho. And past people that have been there, people like Sir Richard Branson, people like that. Richard Branson, if you missed it yesterday or over the weekend, He made it into space, and space is basically unregulated, okay? So there's going to be a lot of opportunities in that. In any event, let's play what happened over this weekend with Virgin Galactic.
This is an ABC News special report.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Dan Harris in New York. We are coming on the air right now to bring you a historic moment in space travel, which really could lead to a whole new era of commercial space travel for civilians. The Unity Spaceship 2 is being carried by a larger plane known as the Virgin Mothership Eve, which in just moments will release the craft at 50,000 feet. Its motor will ignite, and the Unity spacecraft will make its way to suborbital space 50 miles above planet Earth. On board, billionaire Richard Branson and crew of two pilots and three other civilian employees of his company, Virgin Galactic. The mission was delayed by about 90 minutes because of weather issues, but then it was all systems go at Spaceport America in New Mexico, about 180 miles south of Albuquerque. And right there on the ground in New Mexico is ABC's Gio Benitez. Gio, you've been following this story for weeks now. Just walk us through what we're about to see here in the coming minutes.
So, Dan, as you mentioned, we're seeing these incredible images right now. This is about 46,000 feet or so. So when it reaches about 50,000 feet above the surface, that Mothership Eve, which, by the way, is named after Branson's own mother, that Mothership Eve will drop the spaceship Unity. And once it drops, within just a few seconds, we will see that rocket ignite, and then that rocket will take the spaceship to those 50 miles above the surface. It'll probably be somewhere around 55 miles above the surface, which is actually what NASA and the U.S. military consider the edge of space. So everyone that you are seeing right there inside that spaceship, once they reach that, they will officially receive their astronaut wing.
Yep, we were just looking at live pictures of Richard Branson and the other folks who are on this spacecraft, which, as you say, will be dropping from the mothership, the ship, and then igniting its own engines and propelling up into space. Now, you talked about 50 miles above planet Earth. There is some controversy about what technically constitutes space.
That's right. You know, traditionally, the edge of space was considered the Kármán line, which is about 62 miles above the surface. That is what many internationally recognize as the edge of space. But NASA and the U.S. military do recognize those 50 miles above the surface as the edge of space. So Jeff Bezos was basically saying, you know what? Our Blue Origin ship is really going to the edge. This is not. The folks at Virgin Galactic say this is a play on words. It's just semantics. They believe that the experience and the view are going to be about the same. And we are hearing now that it's about 2 minutes until that release day.
I can only imagine what it's like to be inside the plane as we are in the midst of this sort of billionaire space race with Jeff Bezos and Richard Branson and trying to make a mark on this new industry of commercial spaceflight to that would be available widely at some point. Let's bring in somebody who actually knows what it's like to go to space now, retired NASA astronaut Katie Coleman. She is also the host of a podcast called Mission Interplanetary. Katie's a veteran of two space shuttle missions, and she spent 6 months on board the International Space Station. So, Katie, first of all, thank you for joining us. Second, can you take us inside the mind of Richard Branson and the fellow passengers and pilots there? What do you imagine they're feeling as they know that they're about to undergo this incredible journey?
In less than 1 minute, I think when they are released, they're going to feel this drop, and then when that engine lights, that rocket engine, they'll be slammed back in their seats. They'll be going faster than the speed of sound in less than 8 seconds. So I think they're thinking about that.
Let's listen now to Mission
45
Control.
45 seconds.
Here we go, 40.
The Spaceship Unity pilots are arming the launch pylon now. We are armed for release. 20 seconds. Five, three, two, one. Release, release, release. Clean release. Ignition. Good rocket motor burn. There's Mach 1 trimming now. Trim complete. Unity is pointed directly up and heading to space. Things are looking great. We are 25 seconds into the burn now, approaching Mach 2. 30 seconds, Mach 2. Everything's looking really good and stable. 40 seconds.
Katie, there she's throwing out terms like Mach 2.
45 seconds?
Tell us again what that feels like physically.
So they're just about to cut off the engine, then they'll be weightless.
There's Mach 3.
5 seconds.
And 60 seconds,
and that is a full
Wow. They are weightless, climbing. Look at that altitude on the right-hand side.
The pilots are now
175.
And as soon as they do that, it's going to initiate a backflip for Spaceship Unity. This is normal. We want those windows pointed down towards the Earth to maximize that incredible view.
So
they're weightless now, but more important, they have the view.
So they're weightless, and they've been told they can unstrap, and the plane is going to angle itself so that they can look out the window back at planet Earth from what is technically space. Do I have that right, Katie?
You do. And I don't know, we talked some, there was some talk about how many miles, you know, when you have that view, it just doesn't matter. It's a special place to be.
You have described having that view as transformational, something that changes a person. How so exactly in your experience?
Looking back, realizing that basically every Earthling, except the six or seven on the space station and you up in space, two pilots, four astronauts up in space on Virgin Galactic, everyone else, all the Earthlings are back on Earth. It's our planet. We all live there. And it's just something you can't unsee.
It's a kind of perspective that I imagine gets its way into your molecules, where you get a sense that, as Carl Sagan once described, we live on a pale blue.
Okay, today that's a little bit of the Virgin Atlantic successful private spacecraft that Richard Branson, he was on it. I watched this whole thing yesterday. And today's podcast is Mobile Homes, Sun Valley, Virgin Galactic, Social Commerce versus Victimhood. And I'm going to tie in, or at least attempt to tie in, all how these things fit together. Now, Virgin Atlantic. Now, let me start with this. Like I said, if you study how does a person become a billionaire, because out of almost 8 billion people on the planet, there are less than 3,000 billionaires on the planet. And the average people of I would call them average intelligence. So what's the distinction and why there's less than 3,000 out of almost 8 billion on the planet? Well, most billionaires, once again, they are typically pioneers in the industry, or they literally just started industry. And typically, when you're a pioneer, you're involved in something that has very little or zero government regulation. Okay. Now, Sir Richard Branson, he's got Virgin, Virgin Atlantic Airlines. That's regulated. Okay. However, this new venture that he has, it has some on-the-ground regulation, but once he reached space, there's zero regulation. So you're going, and this is where this podcast title comes in at, Mobile Homes. You're going to see, because there's space stations already, so you're going to see people do housing, set up different communities out of the reach of any local jurisdiction here on the ground on planet Earth. So there are more billionaires to come, or uber millionaires. Now, mobile homes in this country, in all 50 states, there's typically some regulation, but there's less regulation dealing with the mobile home industry in the United States versus single-family homes in an urban setting. Like places like New York, Boston, L.A., Chicago, Miami, Seattle. The single-family house, which was at one time had very little regulation, and a lot of these larger cities just really too much regulation. That's why me, for instance, I started dealing with rural property because there's less rules and regulations in most rural areas here in the United States. Now, another clip that I played was on three black guys in Chicago that started a bread company. It's the first black-owned bread company in the United States. Now, there's a gazillion people, including a gazillion black folks, that can bake bread. My grandmother, I stayed with her, my grandparents on my mother's side, like when I was in second grade. And my grandmother was always baking her own bread. But the distinction with these guys, as many other black folks have baked bread now and then, but what these guys discovered that there was no black-owned company that baked bread. So I'm just assuming. I mean, when's the last time you heard somebody that got arrested for baking bread? Okay. So it's baking bread. There might be some regulation, but I'm sure it's like very, very minimal. And as I played the clip, it's for those who heard it, they're getting orders from people in Japan, outside the United States. Now, and if they want to, they can make $1 billion or more just on baking bread. Because there's little, as of right now, there's very little or almost zero regulation for baking bread and selling it. Like I say, there might be, for baking bread, it's probably minimal in this country. But they've got people ordering this bread from outside the United States. So it depends on how big they want to get. They're getting orders from Japan. They might be able to set up something in the rural part of Japan, to, you know, just to bake bread, or China. You know, labor's less expensive in a lot of these places. Have it baked in South Africa or Ghana or the Gambia, someplace like that. But in any event, and it's also a good example of these three black gentlemen were not counting the white man's money. They weren't looking at Pepperidge Farm. They weren't looking at Wonder Bread, or whoever the top brand name people are that make and bake bread and sell it. Like I said, the audio said, this guy, he was out looking for some products that were made by black-owned companies, and he couldn't find any bread that was made by a black-owned bread company. This is what happens when you don't count the white man's money. Look at the opportunity. This guy and his two buddies, they discovered, this is what I call Acres of Diamonds. Matter of fact, check that out on YouTube, Acres of Diamonds, classic audio. Instead of griping and complaining, or not going to the store or boycotting, they recognize, you know what, this is an opportunity. And they start their own black-owned bread company. I predict that there'll be more people like these three black gentlemen. That's why I titled this podcast today, Mobile Home, Sun Valley, Virgin Galactic, Social Commerce versus victimhood. Victimhood doesn't pay any dividends. It might pay it to somebody like an Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson, you know, while they got paid or get paid. But the critical mass of their client base or their financial base, they don't get paid off of victimhood. Matter of fact, with the Sir Richard Branson thing of Virgin Galactic, and these, and particularly these three black men in Chicago who started their own bread company, I can't even see reparations going that far. Like, it really hasn't gone far anyway. But the younger people that are coming up, they're going to be more prone to take advantage of opportunities or create opportunities, like these three black guys out of Chicago, looking at, in other words, what some people might call a problem. They're going to instantly or almost instantly reframe it into an opportunity and start a business. Because if you listen to the story of these people, they didn't go to the government. They didn't go to the government. They didn't go to social services. They didn't call Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson griping and complaining. There's no black-owned companies that are baking bread. They did not march and protest to get their product on the shelf of anybody like that, because cyberspace, the Internet, just like physical outer space, is wide open. Little or zero government regulation. So why wait on the government to cut you a reparation check if it ever gets to that? Because the people that are on that bandwagon, essentially, you got to wait for the slow-moving wheels of government. And basically, it's going to, like Umar Johnson said, there's some people waiting that are praying for black people to get reparations. By reframing a problem or capitalizing on an opportunity, once again, the guy started their own bread company. You can get as big as you want, and that's what I call self-reparations. Virgin Galactic, Bezos has got something on deck dealing with space exploration. Matter of fact, we're almost sort of neighbors. Because where I have my land in Texas, it's just one county over from where his setup is. But in any event, you're going to see more people, particularly black folk, that, and I think it'll be the younger black people, not in all cases, that are looking at, you know what, I'm not getting into the victimhood game. It just doesn't pay any dividends, not on a critical mass level. That story of those three gentlemen that started, right now they have the only black-owned bread company in the United States, that, at least that I know about. That's going to inspire other people. As a matter of fact, there's another lady I'm going to try to get on here. She was in the process of losing her home. Then she and her daughters started baking cupcakes and made enough money from baking and selling cupcakes to catch up the arrears on her home and save her home from foreclosure. They refused to get into the victimhood game. Victimhood doesn't pay off. And I'm including reparations in that. Even if you get let's take some people that did get reparations, like the Japanese, some Japanese Americans got reparations through the 1988 Civil Liberties Act that Ronald Reagan set into motion. Now, that was reparations paid to some Japanese Americans for their internment camps. And I think the average checks ran anywhere from $20,000 to $22,000. These guys, they had to do a hell of a whole lot of lobbying and a hell of a whole lot of campaign contributions and a hell of a whole lot of political work to get that done for their $20,000 to $22,000 check. These guys that are baking their own bread, I don't know how much they're taking in now, but they'll probably be taking in soon $20,000 to $22,000 a day. Not dealing with the government. Telling them, to pay their taxes. Wide open opportunities, there's a bunch of opportunities, so it is infinite. Virgin Galactic, like I say, you got him, you got Elon Musk. and Bezos. It's as one of the moderators on the clips I played. It's not only going to open up a industry. It's giving birth to multiple industries, including mobile homes, because sooner or later, I mean, people are going to need a place to stay in space. I think the way Branson's going to have with Virgin Galactic is, you know, they'll take people up for, you know, $200,000 to $250,000. That'll get you the experience of going up in space for a few minutes or whatever. You know, a whole 90 minutes. He was on a 90-minute experience yesterday. You'll have, but then it'll. I'm sure they got it on the table already. On building a self-sustaining station for accommodations, spending the night in space, spending the weekend in space, spending the day in space, spending as long as you want in space. That's coming. That's, you can call that Mobile Home Galactic. It's coming. You have people, particularly a lot of urban people that used to frown upon tiny houses, but mobile homes, call them, you know, trailer pack trash and all that other stuff. But now you do have black folk that are starting to trickle into mobile homes because there's less rules and regulations to get into those, and you own it outright 100%. Also plays into, now we've all heard of e-commerce. A subset of e-commerce is social commerce. And we'll play a clip on that, then we'll go to the phones real soon.
Hi everyone, this is Julie and today I'm going to talk about social commerce, which is the next generation of e-commerce. First there was e-commerce and it was mobile commerce and then there is social media. And if you think of the big players such as Amazon, which is like so big, and Facebook, which is also like growing more and more, what's the best solution then to just combine them both? Because if you think of it...
Hello friends, this is Ritesh from RetailRitesh.com. I'm back again with my article. This time I have written an article on fight of e-commerce giants. We have all seen all big e-commerce companies like Amazon.com, eBay, in India, if you are in India, then Flipkart, and we have something called Noon.com. All these e-commerce giants are fighting amongst themselves, but do you know who is the actual winner? The actual winner is a social media platforms, something like Facebook, something like WhatsApp, or rather even Instagram. They are becoming or coming out as winner in this fight of e-commerce giants. Today, a social media has given birth to a new segment called social commerce. What is social commerce? Social commerce is a platform, a social media platform, which gives an opportunity for brands as well as buyers, that is consumers, to buy online without leaving the social media. That means, as you might have seen in Instagram, something called swipe up. The moment you swipe up, it takes you directly to a particular checkout page. So you are doing a commerce, that is an activity of buying and selling on a social media platform without leaving it. That has given a birth to something called social commerce. There is a huge chunk of money that has been taken out or eaten out by social commerce companies from traditional e-commerce companies. Now, who are using social commerce? Millennials, definitely. They are the one who are, or rather I call them an Instagram generation. They like a particular dress, they like a particular product on Instagram. They just swipe up, goes to the checkout page, make a payment, and the product arrives at their home. So millennials are driving the growth for social commerce. And I have written a case study about a social media platform called Meesho. Meesho is an Indian platform. It came to my knowledge when I heard a news article That news stated that Facebook has invested more than $25 million USD, US dollars in Meesho platform. What Meesho does is basically it's a reseller platform and uses primarily platform like WhatsApp, Facebook to sell products. It rather helps women entrepreneurs or housewives to try out a way to create their passive incomes through the platform. They can select a product and try to sell it amongst their network in their WhatsApp groups or Facebook groups, etc. The premise of social commerce is, the bottom line of social commerce is, people love to buy from people whom they trust. Hence, social selling is the biggest skill set that our generation or we all need to acknowledge or acquire so that we can grow in coming times. I would request all my readers and followers to read this article on my blog retailretails.com and learn from it. I wish you all the best and keep learning. Thank you.
Hi everyone.
Spaces. Infinite is there to explore.
Our vision is millions of people living and working in space.
One's got to fantasize and dream about these things.
If we're going to continue to make progress and make sure that our descendants have better lives than us, we need to go to space. It's not optional.
Jeff Bezos, the founder of Blue Origin, and Richard Branson, the founder of Virgin Galactic, are in a head-to-head race to travel to the edge of space. In June, Bezos announced his plans to travel to space on July 20th, along with his brother, as inaugural passengers on Blue Origin's New Shepard spacecraft.
I really want you to come with me. Would you?
Are you serious?
I am. I think it would be meaningful. Have my brother there.
Weeks after Bezos' announcement, Branson unveiled plans to travel on Virgin Galactic's fourth crewed spaceflight on July 11th, just 9 days before the Blue Origin trip.
This July, our dream will become a reality.
The important thing about having both the founders go up is it's just the validation.
So, two billionaire founders, two trips into suborbital space just days apart. But the two companies and their missions have big differences. Let's begin with the spacecrafts and their flight plans.
Galactic is much more akin to going up in a commercial airliner. Blue Origin's New Shepard rocket is much more the typical view of what a space rocket looks like.
Virgin Galactic's planned flight begins near Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, where this mothership called the VMS Eve will take off with a spaceship attached called the VSS Unity. At an altitude of almost 45,000 feet, the airplane will release the spacecraft, whose pilot will rocket the vessel into suborbital space, eventually reaching over 50 miles high. This is the altitude that NASA defines as the edge of space. The flight will carry two pilots and four mission specialists in the cabin, but no paying passengers. And the approximately 90-minute trip will end after the craft glides to Earth, making a runway landing back in New Mexico. Now, onto Blue Origin, whose New Shepard spacecraft is slated to launch from West Texas on its first crewed flight. The vessel, which can travel at three times the speed of sound, includes a rocket and a fully autonomous six-person capsule. Approximately 3 minutes after takeoff, the capsule and the rocket will separate. The rocket will then return to Earth, deploying drag brakes to reduce speeds by half while the capsule travels briefly above the Kármán line. This is an imaginary boundary, 62 miles above sea level, that is commonly defined as the beginning of space. It's approximately 12 miles beyond the high point for the Virgin Galactic flight.
Practically, there's absolutely no difference between 50 miles or 62 miles or indeed the surface of the moon. Humans couldn't survive in any three of these. There's a little bit of bragging rights, but officially, you're an astronaut if you go past 50 miles.
The Blue Origin capsule will float back to Earth via parachute, landing in the West Texas desert approximately 10 minutes after launch.
At the top of that arc is where the passengers will actually be weightless. And it's just going to be for 2 or 3 minutes. Now, from the companies, they both say passengers will be allowed to unbuckle the seatbelts and float around the cabin for those 2 or 3 minutes.
Because these flights are suborbital, they're regulated differently than commercial air travel. Congress agreed in 2004 to let the space tourism industry self-regulate to speed its preparations for passenger flights. A spokesperson from the Federal Aviation Administration said its jurisdiction is limited to protecting public safety and the environment during launches and reentry.
With Virgin Galactic, the FAA has to inspect and approve both the mothership and the rocket ship, and it licenses the pilots. Blue Origin is different, that it's a more traditional space rocket. The FAA's oversight of rockets is actually, you know, very different and evolving. It's more self-regulation, but it doesn't actually need formal approval. The formal approval it needs, just like Virgin Galactic, is to carry paying passengers.
The FAA granted approval for Virgin Galactic's full commercial space launch license, and the company says it hopes to launch commercial service next year. Blue Origin has applied for similar approval from the FAA, which it expects to receive by July 20th. Aside from Branson, passengers on Virgin Galactic's flight include Beth Moses, the company's chief astronaut instructor, and Sarisha Bandla, a vice president focused on government affairs and research. The company has yet to disclose prices for its future commercial service, but executives have said trips could cost less than $500,000. The passengers on the Blue Origin trip will be Bezos, his brother Mark, Wally Funk, an 82-year-old pilot with space training,
the best thing that ever happened to me,
and the winner of a charity auction, who bid $28 million for a seat.
Sold $28 million!
As the missions themselves vary, so too do the milestones these flights achieve. If all goes as planned, Branson will be the first of the two founders to go into space, while Bezos' Blue Origin will be the first of the two companies to carry out a space flight with a paying passenger.
Virgin Galactic is basically a pure play space tourism business. If it's safe enough for the charismatic and well-known founder to go up and come down safely, then, you know, that will certainly help the brand.
Two.
With Bezos and Blue Origin, slightly different motivations. The validation that they've managed to put someone, or in this case four people, to the edge of space just helps the broader Blue Origin business, which isn't just space tourism, it's government contracts and military contracts. So for both companies, it's a huge validation that they've arrived and that they can use this as a springboard for the next stage of their different businesses.
All right. Well, STEM students, particularly black ones, you'll see them get into this because this is like the pioneer's pioneer phase right now for that. So STEM students will take advantage of that. But for those that are not into STEM, like I say, one of the audios that we played earlier today were looking at opportunities or selecting one of the opportunities that are in abundance. Typically, they come in the form of problems. But like the three gentlemen out of Chicago, Illinois, they weren't counting anybody else's money. They saw an opportunity and created their own company, Black Bread Company. And you can go to their website, which is Black Bread Co. C-O, Black Bread, and then C-O, one word, blackbreadco.com. That's the Black Bread Company. And they saw an opportunity in something as simple as bread. Something as simple as bread, and like I said, they can ramp that up to $1 billion if they so choose to do so one day. But there's a lot of opportunities like that are wide open. So that's breaking bread is basically low tech, okay? Going into outer space, high tech. So if you're a STEM student or contemplating about taking a STEM curriculum in school or what have you, then, I mean, because like I said, there's going to be so many opportunities. And that's why I say, the way I see it, and I'm just one person, victimhood, and there always be some people playing the victim card. But I think more and more young people are looking at, you know what, the victimhood, it's not paying off. It's outdated. Another way to solve problems is essentially, I mean, look for opportunities. Like I said, it's space. Branson didn't open up the door now. But like I said, but on the ground, there are plenty of opportunities, just like with the Black Bread Company. Who thought, man, how many people have gone out and just, you know, they buy their Wonder Bread, they buy their Pepperidge Farm Bread or whatever their favorite brand is. And, we're working on getting them on this podcast so you can talk to them directly. They've been on Ellen. And so they're getting the word out. Well, yeah, check out their site, Black Bread Company. And let's see what they have here to sell. They've got a premium white bread. They've got honey wheat bread. And they have a variety pack, which includes a premium white and honey wheat. Honey Wheat bundle. And you see a picture of the product, and I'm sure it was well tested, and they're probably still working on stuff. I mean, they didn't have any experience in making or baking bread. So kudos to these three gentlemen, and we'll be bringing more stories, examples of just like what they're doing. And who knows, somebody that's listening right now, you can take, because they didn't do anything original other than form an idea. Their contact information is blackbreadcustomer@gmail.com. In any event, So that's my take on victimhood. You're not going to really probably never get rid of it. There's always going to be somebody crying poor mouth or victimhood or whatever. But I think it's more advantageous is looking at reframing whatever the problem might be. Reframe it into an opportunity. Reframe it into an opportunity. So I don't see any new Jesse Jacksons or Al Sharpton's coming up on the horizon. So, simply because, you know, people looking at things differently on a daily basis. Let's see. Let's go to the phone lines here. So anyway, all that, and once again, the Sun Valley, what they call it, the Sun Valley Billionaires Summer Camp. A bunch of billionaires. You know, they go to what, Sun Valley, Idaho, and they do a powwow for about a week. And I would say Black Enterprise has, they've been having a networking event for entrepreneurs for probably about 20 years now, well, probably more than 20 years, 25, 30 years. Not on the billionaire level, but Black Enterprise does list about 5 or 6 billionaires in their top 100 industrial companies. But it's a great place to, you know, check out Black Enterprise, you know, where you can go network. And then you also have, we had a guest on here, that Pianchi, furnished forth at trade shows. So you get a lot of stimulating ideas. All right. But victimhood, in my opinion, is a dinosaur. it might not be totally extinct now, but like Sears, victimhood is on life support. But that's just L.A.'s take. Anyway, let's go to the phone lines here. 410 area code, your mic is open.
Hotel Brother L.A., how you doing?
Fine, good morning.
Look, before I get into your subject matter, why do you have such disdain for black conservatives? I just want to know that, because on occasions I've noticed that you really, if not disdain, you have a deep dislike for black conservatives. And I just want to know your reason
why.
Hold
on, a dislike of black conservative? I'm considered a black conservative.
How so?
Well, now you got to ask the people that they say I am conservative.
No, I'm asking you, why do you consider yourself a black conservative? Since you say you're a black conservative, but...
I'm really for, and I've said this several times, less government. Or I'm almost an anarchist. No government, self-regulation. But
do you believe in the rule of law?
Yeah.
Do you believe?
I don't believe it now. I believe it's not perfect though.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, we can agree on that. Do you believe in the Constitution? Or you have a problem with the Constitution?
I do acknowledge that it does exist.
Do
now,
you?
Let me say this. I personally think the United States Constitution, although not perfect, but overall I think the United States Constitution needs to be upgraded. And upgrade it on some type of timetable, regular basis. And here's why I'm saying that: it's 2021, July 2021, right now. The Constitution was signed, as we all know, July 4, 1776. In 1776, none of those jokers who wrote them, or distinguished gentlemen, I shouldn't say jokers, none of those distinguished gentlemen that signed the Declaration of Independence. They had no idea the experiences that we take for granted, like electricity, a light bulb, a microwave, the police as we know it today, or law enforcement as we know, none of that existed back then.
I understand.
Indoor plumbing, as we know it today, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, none of those guys had experience any of that. The White House didn't even have any indoor plumbing until, I forgot which president it was. It was about 13, 14, 15 presidents in before there was any electricity or indoor plumbing at the White House. So I believe that what we're experiencing today, Beasley, I think it needs to be updated to reflect what's going on in contemporary times.
Well, you know, that has nothing to do with the Constitution, but do you believe that every United States citizen...
We're talking about guys who... Man, I don't know the last time I wrote with a pencil. They don't write with felt-tip pens. I'm not felt-tip, whatever pens.
But that's in the local statutes and ordinance. But my thing is, do you believe that every citizen has a right to be protected under the rules of the law? Equal protection.
Here's how I put it. It's our individual responsibility. If we are blessed to wake up in the morning, our prime DNA directive is up on us as an individual on how to stay alive, just like any of these creatures on the outside of the house that are flying around, the squirrels going up and down trees and the ants. It's our individual responsibility to stay alive. I'm not depending on any man-made government to protect me.
But you don't believe in mob rule, though, do you?
It doesn't matter whether I believe it or not. It happens.
Well, I understand.
So what can I do to avoid getting mobbed by a mob? What can I do?
I say that because if you don't have protection, if you don't have rules in place to protect you from mob rule, then you are asking the system to protect you under the rules of the law equally.
And I'm not depending on any government, man-made government, to be the be-all and end-all to protect me or to feed me or to clothe me. It's a nice, you know what? It's a luxury.
Right. But you don't believe in having policemen in lawmen in jurisdictions then?
I've been in plenty of towns. I'll give you one of them. That I've got a vested interest in. Taft, Oklahoma has no police force.
Okay, so you don't believe in having any police force or any police protection as far as your property and things like that?
If I you know what? I called the police one time in my life,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't do me any good.
Oh, okay. Well, the reason why I asked you why you have such disdain for black conservatives is because, you know, things that black conservatives believe in, you know, one man, one vote. They believe in upholding the rules of the Constitution. And they believe in making sure that there's equal justice out there for all according to what is written on paper. And the thing is, that's a conservative agenda. But based on what you're saying is you're not a conservative.
I say I am a conservative.
Well, you know, and also...
If I had my way as king of the United States, which I don't, I would have WIC, EBT, all these government programs taken off the books.
Well, I mean, that's not being a conservative. I mean, that's being a libertarian, because I believe in the same thing. You know what? I wish all, and let me stress
all.
Well,
libertarians are to the right of Republicans. So both would be conservative.
Yeah, they're to the right of conservative too.
Yeah, both of them are considered conservative.
Yeah. Well, not really. A libertarian don't believe in all of the things that you and I are talking about, you know, because they believe, hey, like you, hey, I can protect myself. I don't believe in government-sponsored programs. I believe the government should stay out of my business.
Right.
And the thing is... I believe that I have a right to go in and participate in commerce without rules
right.
and regulations. So, but conservatives believe in that, you know, because they write the laws to make sure that these things are put in place.
Well,
they may
now,
not be as liberal as liberals,
although I believe in that, I already know that the way I would like it to be ideally in a utopian setting, that's not the way it is.
Right. So you accept the way things are based on your
I have no choice
to
but to, you know what, and I had to look at accept what rules are on the books and then how I can legally make those rules work for me.
Exactly. And you know what, that's why I asked you all of this, because you know, when you criticize Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, they are black conservatives, true black conservatives, because they make sure and they protest to make sure that the United States live up to the ideals that it expressed for its citizens, whereas your fake black conservatives, they more or less regurgitate the bull corn that white people put out there and call themselves conservatives. But now, you know, I haven't seen Larry Elder get out there and try and preserve the vote and speak against voter suppression. Haven't seen that. I haven't seen a black conservative, so-called black conservative, do that. I haven't seen a black conservative demand justice when there's unfair justice being exhibited out there. I haven't seen that. But these people have done it. I haven't seen a black conservative get out there and march for black folks to have equal representation under the law. I haven't seen that. But these people have. In fact, Al Sharpton took a knife in the chest because he wanted justice for a young man that had been killed out there by in New York. That was, you know, a resident here. His parents was a resident in the area where I lived at. I haven't seen so-called black conservatives do that. That's why I come and ask you, why do you have such disdain for black conservatives?
Well, hold on now. You call Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, black conservatives?
When you march to make sure that there's one man, one vote, when you go out there and make sure that justice is administered fairly, according to the Constitution, what do you call it?
I see those.
I just
two.
Want to know.
Definitely
what do you
not
call
is.
It? They believe in the rule of law. What do you call it?
Well, you can march and protest. I think that's a waste of time. That's why I play the Claude Anderson piece every day.
Well,
because
the thing is,
you
know,
if you don't bankroll the system, if you don't bankroll the system, you're not going to get the legislation on the books that you want on the books.
I got news for you. A black person can bankroll the system all they want to. That's not going to get you justice. That's why come these people out there marching like homosexuals and women. Because they know that, hey, look, yeah, I'm bankrolling all of this shit, but I got to get out there and raise hell and make sure that people understand that while I'm bankrolling this thing, that hey, I have a problem with the way you're treating me. So,
if a person has a problem with the way they're being treated, move. Go to another location.
I'll be damned. I pay taxes. Hey, I ain't going nowhere. My people built this country. And look, when you don't like the way things is going, you protest and you do it just like you say. You bankroll the politicians that's going to go in and fight for your cause. No, I ain't going nowhere, no damn where. But all I'm telling you is that when you say conservative, when you're trying to conserve black culture and you're trying to preserve the rights of black people in this country according to the law and to make sure that this country stands up to the dictates that it says that it's supposed to stand for according to the Constitution and look, conservatives say they believe in the rule of law, then you're a conservative. Now, if you don't do that and you just get out there and criticize people that's doing that, that's not conservatism. That's not. And look, here's the other thing. To make sure that the system administers justice fairly, according to the way they say they have it written on paper, you're a conservative because you're trying to conserve what this country stands for. Now, getting into this thing about victimhood,
mm-hmm.
I think Brother Warren and I last week articulated that very, very well. And the thing is this. If you go out there and you get shot by a robber, you are a victim. Now, I don't know what you call it, but you're a victim. Now, how you go about getting justice for that and stopping it is another thing. And the thing I look at is when people go out there and protest injustice, they are victims to an unjust system. So you're supposed to go out there and deal with it in the kind of way you can. And the thing is, what happened, if the country believes in its ideals and true to its ideals, then and it has mistreated its citizens or people that is in its jurisdiction, then they're victims to that system. Now, you're not a true
Virgin Atlantic, as I played on the clip, Virgin Atlantic, they went in outer space. And I think we can all agree there's going to be a whole lot of industry there. I'm waiting on the first person to say they won't let blacks into space. I'm waiting for somebody to say that. When it's a wide open opportunity. That's why I played the three black guys with the Black Bread Company.
And you
it's
know
opportunities,
what?
You have to make your own opportunities.
That's right. And look, there's nothing, but that's different from what victimhood is. That's comparing apples and oranges, because you got black people out here every day that's out here taking advantage of opportunities. You do it and I do it. And that's why I called in, because, you know, I wasn't going to call in today. But now, look, let me give you this. And I hope I got this right. You said black folks ought to stop counting white folks' money. Now, when you go in businesses,
and I gave an example of the three black guys in Chicago that didn't count Wonder Bread's money or Pepperidge's Farm money, they saw an opportunity and they created their Black Bread Company.
Exactly. But now look, when you go in business, what is your chief motivation?
Profit motive.
Okay. In order to find out if there's a profit there, what do you do?
Well, you got to do your research.
You count other people's money. Okay.
Well, that's what you call it.
Every time I've been in business, I always done a CML, current market assessment, to see if that money's out there. I don't give a damn whether it's black money, white
money. This is what I mean by counting the white man's money. Once again, now, for instance, if I look at Wonder Bread, and Wonder Bread might, I don't know, making $1 billion a year, I don't know. But, and now, here's what I call counting white man's money. All right. Wonder Bread or Pepperidge Farm makes billions of dollars baking breads and baked products. And then I go get a job at, try to get a job at one of those companies, can't get in. I apply to be the CEO, can't get in. And then, you know, I can't get in because they started this company 100 years before we did. And they're making $1 billion, and I might even go into court and sue them for discrimination because they won't hire me. That's what I call counting the white man's money. Whereas with these three guys, what they did was they started their own company and count their own money. They're not trying to sell on with anybody else.
Okay, that's not counting white folks' money. Okay. That's called you making sure that they act in accordance to the law. There's affirmative action laws and equal opportunity laws and everything else. But all I'm telling you is this. When you put out a broad statement like that, you act like, well, all black folks do is sit around and look at white folks.
Well,
white
I didn't
folks
say all black folks now.
Well,
I didn't say all black folks
statement.
Did that.
Well, when you say black
and
folks,
I do bring some broad strokes, but as Tianki said,
yes,
I think we all agree with it. Not all black folks are alike.
Well, you can't be specific, but when people listen to you, the first thing they do is they say, well, that's all black folks are just big for, right? Get out there and big for handouts and everything.
Well,
you
got white
look.
Folks that do it too.
Exactly. But we don't say that. You should say people in general, but you say black folks ought to stop counting black
well,
white
I
folks'
need,
money.
Well, I need to be more politically. Hold on, Beasley, because we got quite a few calls.
But look, let me say this here in closing. Look,
okay.
Let me tell you something. The thing is this. Al Sharpton is more of a black conservative and Jesse Jackson than anybody else, because, look, when you go and sit down to a restaurant, they've made that possible. Because they got out there and they took on the slings and arrows for us while these bourgeoisie Negroes sit back and let them do it. They were so...
Well, hold it now. See, now that's going to open up. I'm going to have to bring... That's a whole other podcast.
You bring
all
it
the
up.
Black,
all you
the black folks who sat down and protested at the white man's lunch counter, where it's right next door across the street, why didn't they just go patronize them?
Exactly. I'm saying the same thing. But look, access means, hey, look, you can spend your money where you want to, but I agree with you. Because, look, we were in business to make sure that you didn't have to take that. But look, before they got out there and marched, when a black person was walking on the street, they had to get on the sidewalk, whether it was mud there or not, and let that white person pass. See, you're too young to know all of the things that was done before this civil rights thing come. You wouldn't have gotten civil rights if someone hadn't got out there and took them blows for you. And those people went out there during that time when it wasn't popular to do that. Now, all of a sudden, hey, look, you know, we can go anywhere we want to and spend our money anywhere we want to, which I don't believe in. But you had to sit in the back of the bus. You had to go head on, and there's certain places you couldn't go and certain places you can't go now. But those people have marched to do all of that. But for people to come out, especially black conservatives, and say, hey, look, you know, these all they do is just go head on and raise hell and everything, I find that very disingenuous, because I haven't seen any black conservative or any bourgeoisie black person get out there and risk their reputation and their family safety to make sure that black folks can kind of halfway, you know, maneuver in this system. So that's why come I brought that up. But you can go ahead on and listen to my
question. Okay, all right. Hold on a minute. Okay, 346 area code, your mic is open.
Good morning, L.A.
Good morning, Warren.
You know, they say a mind is a terrible thing to waste. I'm just sitting back listening and looking at, you know, we don't know the history of things and how things turn around and where they are. And we'd be talking and we'd be saying things that we don't have no clue of what we're talking about. And so to go back, you know, I even hear people use the term social justice. You know, this is in the interest of social justice. So when you say the interest of social justice, you're supposed to be speaking on behalf of everybody. But the misconception behind the interest of social justice is that it's not for everybody on an individual basis. It's for a group, an organization who believes in certain things and have manipulated people in that organization, that it will benefit them on a personal level. But when you look at it on the individual level, it's not really in the best interest of everybody from an individual point of view, but from that group's perspective. And this is where you start to deal with mob rule. This is where you start to deal with the people. And I'm still trying to figure out how Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton are conservatives. That's one that I really haven't understood there, because we're talking about people who are looking for more government. When you have less government, then you have more control of your life and the decisions that you make, as opposed to implementing more government. And after implementing more government, get more government programs and then have you under the microscope to control you like they want to control you. So I don't understand that kind of conversation or language or talk. I really don't. And especially, we try to talk about a big switch, but it's really hard to understand why the majority of African Americans started out in this country as conservatives and somehow ended up as, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess I would
Democrat.
Say liberals.
Liberals. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't want to use that, but yeah. How did that happen from the same very party that was Jim Crow? And everybody said, oh, it was a big switch. The big switch is a big lie. It never happened. So these are things we have to ask ourselves when, you know, we start talking in a radical talk. And, you know, it's also some of us get stuck in history. Some of us are still living in the 60s. I do not doubt that the civil rights era needed to take place. It was needed. But if we keep living in the 60s, of what was done then we miss out on what needs to be done today. We have a whole new set of different problems in 2021 than we had in 1965. And that's where we lose sight of it.
Now, what you're saying, that, and I agree with you, that's why I said when Beasley asked, when he brought up the Constitution, that this is just my belief, I think the Constitution, when it needs to be updated, or that might not be the right word, but we live in a completely different world than what they lived in when they signed it.
Well, this is the thing with the Constitution, L.A., and I have to personally agree with you. I think it needs to be updated as well, but it can be updated. It was set in a way that, you know, if you want to change certain things in the Constitution, certain things had to take place. But it was set where it was almost made impossible, and that's so people wouldn't take liberties with it and change it and construct it to what they wanted it to be. So this is why things in the Constitution, which require so many votes and so many this and that, is set the way it is. So it's not impossible, but it's hard.
Right.
And you have to remember that the Constitution was actually put in place to protect people from government. That was, well, at least the first ten amendments, the first ten amendments, known as the Bill of Rights, was put in place to protect people from government. So if we understand those first ten amendments is to protect people from government, why would we go and get more government?
True. Although now these days, we know it with these police shootings. It's because, you know, you got a number of people that's a branch of government that a lot of people just feel uncomfortable with.
Well, you know, I wonder what the ratio, I haven't taken the ratio, but I wonder what, if you go back to the civil rights era and you look at police brutality then as opposed to police brutality now, and then you go back and look at black-on-black crime in 1960s, the severe civil rights era, and 2021, I bet you the numbers would be very different. What I mean by that, I believe if you went back to the civil rights era, you would probably have more unjustified police murders and less black-on-black crime if you looked at that. If you come to 2021, I believe you have more justified police shootings and more unjustified black-on-black crime. That's my belief. Now, I could be wrong.
I go along with that belief, too.
You know, because you're talking about the civil rights era, you're talking about black people who were more family-oriented, who stood up and just wanted to be respected in society. You know, 2021, the family structure is just pretty much, especially in the black community, is completely destroyed. And so you have especially boys growing up in homes with no fathers, no discipline, no structure, any of that. You know, and it's just like the Wild Wild West. And so until, again, you know, I'm always about accountability and responsibility. We can sit up and point the fingers and we can blame. We can find all kind of reasons why this ain't working there and they did this. But until you first take accountability and responsibility of your own actions, you can't expect anything better from anybody else.
What do you think victimhood? You think that's going to, it'll never be eliminated, but that's why I played the three guys in Chicago. They started their own bread company. Do you think you'll have more black folk, particularly younger black folk, become entrepreneurs and turn problems into opportunities, or some people just jumping on a victimhood train and staying there?
Well, this is, you know, I'm kind of, 2021, the future of America is kind of uncertain to me, especially we have the cancel culture, and that is, you know, people that can't handle anything. You know, you say something that they don't like, and see, that's that mob rule mentality. We'll just cancel you. No discussion. We forget about freedom of speech. We just don't like you and don't agree with you, so we won't cancel you out. You know, that's a dangerous thing. This is what happens when you have mob rule. So I really don't know. I really don't know, because if you're dealing with a emotions as opposed to intellect, that becomes very dangerous. An emotional person is more dangerous than a person that sits down and thinks. You know, if you sit back and look at your serial killers, these are people that are very emotional, whether they show it to you or not.
Yeah, I'm afraid to, and online you can basically say what you want to, but they have some limits.
You know, and another thing, let me say this too, L.A., for people who are looking for equality. Equality does not exist in nature. If you're looking for equality, you in fairy tale land, that'll never happen. How tall are you, L.A.? By what, 6'8"? 6'7"?
No, 6'8".
I'm 6'6".
Yeah.
I'm 6'6". So why is it that you get to be 6'8" and I get to be 6'6"? And somebody else is 5'2". Why
right.
is it you get to be white or I get to be black? So when you're looking for equality in nature, you're looking for the wrong thing. Now, what the Constitution and what the laws are supposed to do is not give you equality, but level the playing field. Once the playing field is level, then it's up to you what you're going to do with it after the playing field is level. The playing field has been leveled. Not that anybody going to automatically just give you equality, but if you don't want to learn the law, you don't want to learn the judicial system, and then, you know, time something happened, oh, they're picking on us, you don't even know how the system works. You haven't taken the time to even study the system.
That's true. And with capitalism, is you go out and make as much as you want to make.
Right. I'm a fan of capitalism. I'm not a fan of socialism or Marxism or communism. I'm a fan of capitalism. You know, because
communism didn't work for the Soviet Union. That didn't work. So it's like, for instance, some people are happy with, like, you take a squirrel, okay, the squirrel will go out, and, you know, for their little squirrel household, you know, they might be happy with getting 3 or 4 acorns a day, I don't know. And another thing, you know, for him or her, you know, they might be content with 2. It's the same with Planet Earth. So you're right, equality, I mean, some people are happy with less, some people are happy with more.
Right. Now, that answered your question about being a billionaire. Why are they only – you have to have a billionaire mindset. Some people, once they get a certain amount of wealth, they're comfortable. They don't want to do no more.
Right.
You know, I've been in situations where, you know, Marco, he was a photographer. I'd never forget. And I came in and helped him with his business. And, you know, he was decent making – but I saw how I could upgrade it. Every time I tried to upgrade his business to bring in more business, he blocked it. And I have to come to the conclusion, well, he don't want no more than what he has. So I can't.
And there's a lot, you know what? There's a lot of people like that. Yeah, there's a lot
that's
of people
right.
like that.
And that's where the mindset thing comes from. You know, so a lot of people don't want their situation to be better. It's just like the great Booker T. Washington says, a lot of people don't want the Negro to heal for reasons 1 and 2, and that is because, can you all hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. Something was trying to come through my phone. But just like the great Booker T. Washington says, a lot of people don't want the Negro to heal because, number one, they want sympathy, and number two, it pays. So a lot of people make
and
money.
And see, that's how I look at Sharpton and Jesse Jackson.
Yes, exactly.
But, you know, part of the capitalist system, they're free to do that.
Right? If you want to buy into it, buy it. Exactly.
Right. that's the way
so
they look at it.
So those who choose not to buy into it, you know, they don't buy into it.
You know, so, all right, hold on, Warren. Let me go to 314 area code. Your mic is open.
Hello, L.A. How are you doing?
Fine this morning. How about yourself?
Good morning, Warren Houston. You know, Warren, you are so such a good inspiration for people like myself to hear speak on issues. And
thank you. Thank
you should be an example for students at any level, elementary into college, even adults, to hear you speak because apparently those trying to get their heads now the nefarious deviant mean. And I say this because we know that we have access educating in the STEM field, but they want to work for companies like Boeing, Lockheed, Shell Oil, CIA, Department of Defense, and NASA. And then you got those out there, others out there, that say that you shouldn't go to work because all you're doing is furthering white supremacy.
Yeah.
And you hear them all over the place. They just some damn idiot, ignorant fools. And,
right.
You know, you just made mention that you're working with a relative and they didn't want to get no bigger. Well, I have done that too. Because I've had projects that I was asked to bid, and I can give reference to a seismic reinforcement project for the Missouri Department of Transportation, if I looked at it and came up with a price for, say, $3 million, well, I really didn't want to do it. So I would bid $6 million. By doing that, I would be hoping I would put myself out where I wouldn't get it. And also, at the same time, I would be being respectful for them and thankful for them asking me to look at it. Now, in most cases that work, do you know that sometimes when I would double or triple my price, they would think, we want you to do it anyway? Do you believe that?
Yeah.
And I'm a black organization. We're dealing with those who are working for an agency and those who are managing it. They white. More cases than not, white males. Wonder why the white males want to give me a black organization, a company, a price. And I say surely they knew that the price was too high when you're doing it the Department of Transportation, because the engineers are pretty sharp. Now, the other case, understand. So I could have played him hood and said, I'm going to call Al Sharpton Jackson on y'all because you're doing something wrong. And see, here's Al Sharpton Jesse. I ain't going to say what they did wasn't needed at the time. But see, they won't let it go. Why? It's because of what Booker T. Washington said. Please. What does it pay, Warren? Well, they form non-profit corporations to work their struggle thing under Rainbow Push or Action Network. And then they go to these places and say, you got a problem, and I can help fix it. But we want you to donate to our company, our organization. Right. And out of their donations, they take their salary or whatever else they want to call it, consulting fee, whatever. And that's how they become miniature millionaires. Because for Al Sharpton to come to a team, he's going to charge from thousands of dollars. Like I said,
now he, matter of fact, Pianchi, to piggyback on what you're saying, six years ago, Warren, I think you interviewed her too. Tangela Lippick out of Orlando, her son got killed in the church. She called, his name? Sharpton. And she said Sharpton, or his secretary said, he would come, but he needed $30,000 up front first.
Yeah, that's right. We had a incident in St. Louis area where he was they were doing highway for the Department of Transportation. It started down Highway 55, South St. Louis, way down the side south. Then it was coming on.
I don't know if you can fix your phone, but it keep.
Pianchi, you've been going in and out.
Is that better?
Just keep on talking.
Yeah.
Well, it's a highway project. And let me turn this off. This highway project was started far south St. Louis, came up through north. And the contractor that was doing the work was hiring blacks. So we had a group, actually it was a subgroup network in St. Louis that was protesting. And one of the ways they protested ultimately was to shut down the highway. They blocked the highway. That was back, I forget what it was, back in 2000. And I talked with Eddie Don and his group. And I said, you know, I don't use their work. Ain't no money. I tell y'all how to shut the place down by using rolling blocks. They did. So they shut the highway down. They had out. Come in and walk out on the way, and they had a little podium stuff right there in the lane. He done a speech. Some other people done some speeches. When the FBI was in the country. And then they left. So I guess it was maybe the next day, a few days, I had a contractor call me up. Poster. His name was Doug Jones. He said, "Pete, we want you to do these bridges. One was at Highway 70 and North Grand. The other was Adelaide Street Bridge, which I wish I didn't ever do." And he gave me the work. And I'm a conservative. Wasn't no damn liberal around that could do that. They asked for something that they couldn't do. Is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
So I off of it. I've done the time material. Whatever it costs me, you pay, and I want a percentage of it. So what I'm saying is Al Sharpton got $3,000 out of that for coming in. But, you know, another thing, too, L.A., you talk about, you are absolutely right, stop counting conservatives' money. Because the liberals ain't got no money. And rebel rivals ain't got no money. Always spending somebody else's money. Sharpton and Jeff Jackson always go to the federal government like they have been because they want the federal government to make happen what they already have power to make happen. But they don't organize in that way. You may mention about police brutality. Federal government has no thing to do with how police departments operate unless they are called in at some possible civil rights violations. Then what do they come up with their findings as a solution? Well, consent decree. What does consent mean? I mean, come on, what does consent mean? That means that you got and they agree upon something, or what else? They don't agree.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't agree,
make a good point. The local police, that's a local, that problem's got to be solved on a local level. Because, like you
absolutely
said, there's no federal police.
There's no police. The U.S. and the Constitution is what presidents for state and local police, not the federal. What about you, eight up north? We getting off the sidewalk, nor was we riding the back of the bus as unless we wanted to. Came from baseball. We got on the bus and the players headed to the. Why? Because we was back there and having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
I hear some of this stuff like. Bit my people built the country. There ain't no place where you can show what slaves built the country. I think a slave gonna build a country. Them people coming from Africa, two steps out of primitive, if not in there. The human beings, but that's just the way it was.
Yeah.
Hell, they were slaves where they came from. Slaves, nothing new. They were slaves where they came from. In fact, Africa taught the world about slavery. If we give Africa the teaching the world about everything else, well, shouldn't they talk about another venture that was profitable, and that was what? Slavery.
Yeah.
There ain't no food. On the Constitution, you think it, I don't think the Constitution need to be changed. It gives you basic rights. And I would like to hear from somebody say where it needs change that and then make it call better. And it's not going to serve the states right. See, people look at states different. States are little countries, is what they are. The country of Mississippi, the country of Washington, the country of Michigan, the country of Illinois. We used to always say that we need a black politician. Well, you got politicians in Illinois. You got a that's black, too, so she's right. You got a police superintendent. In fact, the last team number that I know is black. Second in command is black. She's a female. She's a lieutenant. The number one in Illinois, black. A Muslim. Secretary of State in Illinois, black. The head prosecutor in the county that Chicago sits in, Cook County, is black. Fox. But even with all that, Warren, even with all that begging and what you got now, L.A., in the past 38 days in Chicago, you done had 26 black shots about blacks and 98.
Yep.
Now, let me ask you something. Last year, 4,845 shot, 145 murders. If these are kind of results from having all black leadership, I don't want it.
Yeah.
If this is what you get with all black leadership, I don't want it. Maybe that's the reason why in Ferguson, Missouri, the blacks that moved there decades ago established themselves, nice homes, they left during the riots. And guess where they moved? They moved across the Missouri River to St. Charles County in the areas like Louisville. That's damn 100% white, and all the police is white. So if they're scared of police and scared of white folks, why does the prosperous ones, why do they want to be in those areas? And guess what? When Africans come to this country, that's where they move to. They don't move in the hood with a damn... out into those areas.
True.
Move some areas out into. So
that's true.
To put that out there, I had to make a list, and I think I won everything that
well,
I had on this. Oh, and I'm to tell you, brother, the company you was talking about, I'm gonna call you out. Show and tell you what's going on there, and I'm
you talking about with Virgin Atlantic?
No, the bread company.
Oh, the black bread
Atlantic.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Isn't it that whites are doing what they're doing with this new industry of travel? You know, you say ain't nothing stopping from doing that.
All right. Well, you talk
nothing
about them all the time. You talk
oh,
about them
absolutely.
All the time.
NASA is one of the top employers for black STEM graduates when they are surveyed. I think number three, somewhere around in there. Somewhere around in that ranking. So I think it's a wonderful thing that there's a lot of opportunities in
the. Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Victimhood, it might not be totally extinguished, but. I think the younger people are going to be looking at STEM programs and getting involved with them and take it like, say,
but you know who
it's,
don't
it's
want
going
that,
to be
don't
several
you?
Industries that are going to open up because of this.
You know who don't want that? It is your Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson group, NAACP, because they want to keep all those kids grouped up in the same environment in now. You know why? Because blacks make money off of their academic failure. That's why they don't let them go. That's against school choice. And especially money follows the child. They're against that. I can give you news. I can give you some locations and areas where I show you videos talk about this. They don't want to let those kids go. When you have President Donald Trump come along, you got the teachers' unions coming to fight them. But here's another thing. When you do have those black cultural-themed schools, they ain't teaching the kids neither. All they got them doing is learning some pseudo-history, playing drums, dancing, and saying Habar Ghani Ashe, and, you know, talking and saying some Swahili words. That's what's going on. Kids ain't learning.
Yep.
That's not going to get you in the space.
And if I'm lying, somebody where I'm lying.
No, you
and I help get some of them schools started. But you can't do it in the public school system because if you have a successful school in public school, you know what they do? They start taking teacher out of the school building and putting them elsewhere, thinking that the miracle that apparently looked to them, it looked like a miracle. Say, damn, we got a miracle here. Let's take this teacher and put him over and let these teachers go elsewhere and work miracles. It don't work like that.
Well, on anyway. That note, Pianki, we're going to wrap it up for this Monday.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
All
right.
I want to talk to you, too, about some home you in your mind that you're talking about. How do you make that happen?
Okay. All right. On that note, everybody, have a good rest of the night.